Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, no matter where you are in the world today, welcome to our new radio show with your host Mike Holt and my guest today, our first Gotcha Radio guest, is Monica Evers. Monica, would you like to introduce yourself and tell the listeners who you are?
Sure, Mike. I'm a culturalist. I've been working in the culture side of business for about 20 years, working with businesses to understand the drivers that make the decisions inside their organisations, and as well as that, how it relates to their brand. So, if you like, it's exploring that. And what I wanted to do about 2 years ago was create a book on what creates the identity of nations. And that is, a friend of mine had started a controversial Facebook page and invited me to come on it. And that was Stop the Mosque in Bendigo. And I did that simply to understand the nature of Islam and how its effect in the world and also in Australia. And in doing that, I discovered that the value sets of Islam and the value sets of Australia were diametrically opposed. And I basically, if this was a merger between two companies, I would have said, no, don't go ahead, this is just wrong.
You talk about the values of Islam and the values of Australia. Would these values of Australia also apply to other Western democracies?
Oh, yes. Right across the board. The values of equality, whereas in Islam there's no equality, it's male supremacy. And also there's no equality outside of people who follow the religion, whereas, you know Australia, everyone's equal. It doesn't matter whether you're a man, woman, child even, you know, like we have equality across broadly across everything. And this is not the case with Islam. And I could see with things as basic as equality, you know, even female equality, women are not equal in Islam. And it was one of the reasons why they got out of the UN Human Rights and created their Cairo Rights for Islamic Nations. Because they couldn't agree with that basic fundamental principle that's across the Western democracies, that women are equal to men. In the Quran, women are not equal to men. They couldn't get over that. So that's a stumbling point for all Islamic nations.
Right. Now, this brings up a very interesting point. We saw the spring, or whatever it was, the Arab Spring, where they were all getting out there and we want freedom, etc., but nothing actually came of it, but they were all clamouring for freedom. But what were they clamouring for freedom for?
Well, I know that with Egypt in particular, and theirs was a freedom of being able to vote, they were given the alternative between the past military junta, so to speak, and the Muslim Brotherhood, which was is high Islamic. And what they really wanted was to elect their own people and not have a choice between two evils, so to speak, and that's what brought them out to the streets.
And that didn't actually work out too well for them, did it?
Well, it didn't work out for the Muslim Brotherhood because they ended up getting rid of them. I think at that one stage there was over a million members of the Muslim Brotherhood. Mm. I mean, a phenomenal amount of people committed to the overthrow of the West. That's where I got.
Yes. And now, of course, this directly affects us, this lack of freedom under Islam, because on Facebook, as you have just experienced, and I have experienced many times, and many patriots have experienced, we are being targeted and taken down. Our pages are being taken down. We're being banned for days or weeks at a time. In my case, one of my accounts has been banned since last September, without any prospect of me ever being able to get back access to it, because one Islamic admin, I believe sitting in Morocco, took exception to something that I posted. you didn't even post something, and yet you got taken down because all the admins on your page were banned at the same time.
Correct.
What are your views on this?
Well, we now have 10 admins and editors, which is a sizable amount of people that are able to post on our page. And one of the admins posted a Breitbart article, which is an American base, but they've also got a London office as well. It's a general news media, and they posted an article about asylum seekers. Now, as soon as you, because recently there's been an agreement between Merkel and Facebook that they're not allowing criticism of asylums and how they're doing in Germany. Now, Mark Zuckerberg, for some reason, decided that he would agree to a kind of censorship. We thought this would only relate to Germany. However, what's playing out is this article said that essentially Christian gays and women were fleeing asylum seeker centres because of the problems they're having with Muslim men. And that's that supremacy thing again. And that article posted on our page with a comment that that said, I think they said something like, looks like Muslim men need to be housed separately. And you know, that's like an Australian calling a spade, you know, it's just the obvious.
Yes, innocuous comment.
It's an innocuous comment. It got the entire page, basically every admin and every editor on the page was banned. So my Monica profile, I haven't been on now for months. Every 3 days they find something else to ban me on, and it's not posts that I'm doing. So this is, I'm now being permanently blocked on Facebook. And this has nothing to do with what I'm posting, but this is just a way of censoring.
Right.
So everybody on that page, all 10 admins and editors were all banned for wherever they were up to. So I think it's pretty tragic, actually. One of the admins is back today, so the page, I think, is running again. But it just shows that here we have an agreement that's made with Zuckerberg in Germany, and here we are in Australia, and we're not able to learn from the German experience to make political decisions in Australia. And this is against our democracy.
Absolutely. Are you sure it's Mark Zuckerberg that is actually making the decisions? Does he actually have a hand in making the day-to-day decisions?
No, it's not him. It's been alleged that the administration has been put to two countries because of cheapness, you know, like Morocco and Indonesia. My understanding is that it's only $10 per admin intervention from those places, whereas Australia it's more like $70 or $80. So the difference in wage rates is the reason why it's gone to those countries. But because of the cultural differences, we're dealing with two countries that are essentially Islamic in their cultural attitudes. So they would be vetting what we're seeing and being more sensitive, culturally sensitive, from a Muslim paradigm, of course. Do you remember it wasn't so long ago that they did a study on Facebook, and I'm not sure exactly where the study came from, but they did two pages. One was anti-Israeli and one was anti-Muslim. And the anti-Israeli page never got taken down, and yet the anti-Muslim page got taken down. Both were reported. They're identical in every way, you know, but just different. And I think it took Facebook 2 months after being exposed to finally taking down the anti-Israeli page or anti-Jew page.
I think we need to have a class action against all of these people who are trying to shut us down, and basically that means Facebook and some of the left-wing groups, some of the right-wing groups. They're all guilty of the same thing.
Well, Mike, you know, ever since we had that conversation, I don't know, a year ago, where you talked to me about what is really a representative of a, you know, like what creates democracy and how should it work. And one of the things you said to me was that the elected representatives that we've got, they should be knowing what we want and then taking that into the government. And what's happening is our voice is getting drowned out by all these different areas. And that's the thing I would really love to talk about today. You know, like Facebook is one of them, but there are another 11 things that are stopping our voice from being heard in our government. All right. And I think it's about time we all started, like, looking at it and saying, we've got to do something about this.
I agree. But before we do that, perhaps it would help to understand why our voice is being drowned out. First of all, we the people don't have a voice in government. We do not have any way of making our will plainly stated to the government. We get given the choice to vote between one party or the other, and once they get in, as you stated, they don't represent the people, they represent their party and the party policies, and we are left out in the cold. Now, one of the problems that we face with this is that our electorates are so large. My electorate, for instance, is around about 98,000 people. Well, no representative can get to know those people on a personal or direct basis, even if he spends the whole of the time that he's elected going around talking to people. It's just not physically possible. So one of the things that we would like to see is to have a referendum of the people asking if we can reform the electoral boundaries and bring in smaller electorates of only 5,000 people. 50 electorates would make one regional government, and one regional government would then send one regional representative to federal parliament. Now, there would be about 100 regions around Australia, so we would be able to make our feelings known, and if a representative did not perform according to our vote or our requirements, we could actually recall that representative and change with another one and have a quick vote. Of 5,000 people, with electronic voting, how long would it take to do? A few days, a week, a couple of weeks. Whereas we have right now, we have big electorates, we have big bang votes once every 3 years. Why not bring in smaller electorates and rolling votes? So this month, 5 or 6 regions could have an election, and then next month a few more, and so on, and just keeps on rolling. And one of the benefits of this would be that in our parliaments, we would replace, say, 50% of the representatives and leave the other 50% there as the old, you know, white-haired, wiser people who could guide the incoming crew, and we have continuity of government. What do you think of that idea?
Well, I know in the upper house, that's how the Senate works. They've got 6-year terms, and every 3 years, half of them get replaced. You have it up there, and they did that really to make sure that the people, like, where they're less popular, they get representation. Right. But again, they tend to go down party lines as well.
That's the problem.
I think it's an issue with party lines, because instead of the people being able to say, well, look, this is what's concerning to our electorate, we're having parties go, well, look, like you think about it right now. At the moment, give me one major party that is standing up against Islam. Any one of them.
None.
Once Abbott took a back seat, we've got nothing. For the first time, we have three parties all singing from the same hymn book. How is that possible?
Oh, it's possible, all right, because of this Big Bang elections. I think it's time we take a quick break, Monica. So I'd like to play a beautiful song by an old rock and roller, Dion, who was big in the 50s and then went into the 60s and faded away, became a junkie, and it wasn't until the 1990s, I believe, that he actually made a comeback. And I tell you what, his comeback album was just fantastic. It was called Yo Frankie, and this is a song off that album. It's called Loving You. Thank you. Radio show with your host Mike Holt, and my guest today once more is Monica Evers. Monica is has been a guest on the show before, so welcome back, Monica.
Oh, happy to be back.
Yeah, we always have some great conversation. We were talking about our freedoms, etc., so would you like to carry on with that?
Yeah, I want to go back to this concept of good government. From my point of view, a government is there to do the will of the people, and so it's meant to be a whole lot of electors and representatives understanding their electorate, going into the government and making laws congruent with what's going on in their electorate and what the changing dynamic of the society requires. Now, what's stopping that? Like, where is that changing? And I thought, well, have a look at some things like, for example, how the UN is invalidating our voice in Parliament.
Well, I agree with you. The UN is one of the problems, but I think the basic problem came out this morning while I was sitting in the dentist's chair, and my dental hygienist was talking to me, and she asked her assistant, "What do you know about politics?" And she just shook her head and said, "Nothing. I was never taught anything in schools. We have to get the kids educated, because if we don't know what our rights and our responsibilities are under the law, under the Constitution, we can't expect any good government." And that's exactly the situation we're in here today. But that also brings in the problem with, as you mentioned, the UN, the domination of the oil countries nowadays in the UN. So let's talk a little bit about that, Mon. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, look, I've got actually the whole school issue and the uneducated people not educated as one of those points, and I totally agree with you. But there's something's probably a little bit more insidious behind that. I'm going to have to go around, if you don't mind, I'd like to address it, but come back down to it, because it's a really important point that you've raised. When I was doing some research recently into the treaties that we've gone into as a result of joining the UN, and we didn't have a vote on that, by the way. This was something the Labor Party decided that they would pull their support from. Did you know the Australian Labor Party helped form the UN, and they were instrumental in the whole human rights, how they created all of that?
I wasn't aware of that, but it doesn't surprise me.
Well, that's why we have... that's why the Labor is so behind all of those things. If you look at why most councils won't allow mosques, it gets down to human rights. Everyone has the right to a religion.
And you mean that's why councils are allowing mosques?
No, why the mosques are going, because it's on that one human rights point. Now, while it sounds really good in principle, who's decided what is a religion and what is not? And that I'm going to get to that whole expert thing in a minute. But the UN treaties that we got stuck with were things like, for example, the Lima Agreement that we went into in 1972, which was essentially to open up Australia to a global marketplace. In principle, this sounds like a really great idea. Let's get everybody involved. Let's go and buy from the world. Let's drop all the tariffs. Let's make it an equal playing field.
And I got to admit to you, when I first heard it, I thought, well, that's a good idea. Now the poor nations will get a chance. Little realizing that the rich nations would actually lose by it.
Oh, do you know what? I've just done a timeline. Do you know, within 10 years, our unemployment rate had gone up 300%? 300%. Our industry ended up having to be slashed down to 30%.
Yeah.
And what that meant was we were no longer independent. Yes. And you know, by the quality of the products we get, we don't have the expertise. The developing nations don't have the expertise.
That's right.
And so we end up inheriting cheap goods. Yes, inferior goods, landfill problems.
Mm-hmm.
And we had other things that, there were other complications, like, for example, our farmers, thinking that they were protected, would make investments for their farms that had, you know, purchasing cycles of equipment, for example, that were 20 years, 30 years.
Mm.
And then all of a sudden, taking that away, that protection away, we expose them.
Right.
It's like we've reneged on a promise that we gave to an entire industry. And we wonder now what's happening with the farmers as one is dying every day, committing suicide because of the financial duress they find themselves in.
Mm.
And I just look at the things that, and I think this is culpability of the government.
Yes.
When you start looking after your own people, we were not asked whether we wanted to go into the Lima Agreement. And the people who were advising people to go into the Lima Agreement obviously didn't have the foresight to be able to see the issues that would create into our culture.
That's right. Well, none of us did, I think. I mean, as I said, I was all for it. But, you know, there are always unintended consequences. And we should be voting people in who have the foresight to see those unintended consequences. And if we are not, then we're just as much to blame as they are.
Well, I would agree with you. But the thing is, here's where I go. All these treaties, And like, you know, climate control is the latest one, this one that we signed up to in November. These are being put to the Australian people. We're having to fund them, and yet we're not getting a say on whether we want them.
Mm.
And it's like a foreign body, which is the United Nations, is now having a say over the voice of the people.
Mm.
And I'm saying this is invalid government. You can't do this. This is not sovereignty. And I'm going, this is actually illegal, because the Australian people have to have the right to be able to speak louder than any foreign entity, whether it be OPEC, OIC, United Nations, you name it.
I agree. In fact, they shouldn't have any say at all.
in how we govern ourselves.
If you give people the power to make decisions about how we are governed, they are going to make informed decisions because it's in their good interests.
The best way to have an uninformed electorate is not given the responsibility to be responsible for their decisions. Like, you know, but let's face it, that's what we do when we go, who do we feel like voting for, Liberal, Labor or Greens? For the first time, Australians are faced with, if we're concerned about the issue of Islam, then we're faced with which party, none of those parties are going to service. And that's why this time round is going to be an election where the independents are going to be scrutinised and supported, I think.
I believe it. The trouble is there are also parties around, minor parties now, that are making claims that they're actually not going to honour. So we need to be very careful what parties, you know, minor parties we support.
Well, I think one of the things, if we start bringing in citizens-initiated referendums, people are going to start getting confident as citizens. I think at the moment, it's true, we are incompetent. I mean, I've lived all this time, and it was only because I was helping Elise with her maiden speech, because she stood over the weekend.
You're talking about Elise Chapman?
And I looked into the... She wanted to brief everybody about what it means to be in the Senate, and that's when I discovered about the six-year terms and the way that all works. Mm-hmm. And how could it be that I've gone through 3 tiers of education and I still don't know this stuff?
This is really taught.
It's almost like we're being dumbed down. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's participating in the electoral process. The same with, I have another person I know, Anita Donlan, and she's running against the Labor stronghold here. And she's the same, you know, she's forever educating me on basic stuff that I should know.
But we all should know.
Yeah, I agree. And I just think that that's where we have to change the education has to be on understanding what our rights are as citizens. And of course that goes against any socialist agenda because they want the state to become the next
That's right. No, it's when you start talking about socialism, again, we have an ideology that is diametrically opposed to everything that Australians love. Our freedom, our ability to make personal decisions and take responsibility for them, they are gradually taking that away from us. And it's been a very gradual process, and it's been deliberate. If you know anything about the Fabians, who basically are soft communists, they made a decision back in the 1880s to weasel their way into governments around the world and suborn them from within. And that's what they've been doing. Now we are starting to reap the results of that. It's a very bad situation, and it's one that we actually need to address very quickly, because otherwise our freedoms will disappear so fast now that we have very few already, that we will lose everything. I think it's time to stop again now, Monica, and let's have a listen to a reading of the Quran.
Each week we read a verse from the Quran in an attempt to understand what it teaches Muslims. As we are finding out, a lot of the things that the Quran teaches are actually very dangerous for civilization and the rest of the world. This week is no different. We're reading from the Quran, Surah 9, verse 9, paragraph 30. And the Jews say, Ezra is the son of Allah. And the Christians say, the Messiah is the son of Allah. These are the words of their mouths. They imitate the saying of those who had disbelieved before. May Allah destroy them, how they are turned away. What this is really saying is that the Muslims are claiming that the Jews and the Christians are claiming the Messiah as Allah. And yet Allah is a completely different God. The son of the Jews Yahweh, and the Son of the Christians, Jesus, have absolutely nothing to do with Allah. Allah was a moon god in Mecca that was worshipped by primitive people before Muhammad ever came along and took it over. But even worse is that anybody, according to this surah, who disbelieves the words of Allah will be destroyed. Islam is a criminal conspiracy.
Welcome back to Gotcha Radio with your host Mike Holt, and my guest today is Monica Evers. Welcome back, Monica, and it's good to have you back on the show. Just before the Quran reading there, we were talking about how our governments are not serving we the people. And you did mention to me that socialism seems to be the driving force behind this. What's your reasoning on that?
I think that, you know, like you mentioned it earlier, there's been a big push for people to go into a kind of caring, but it's legislated caring, and I don't think you can do that. I don't believe that you can get an organisation or a government to legislate caring and love. And if you look at political correctness, what is the whole thing behind it? It's actually legislated love and caring. But what they're doing with the whole legislation of it is that they're actually stopping people developing those muscles that they should be developing themselves. And this is not something you legislate. You can't legislate someone to love you.
They're building a dependent people.
Yeah, that's true.
And it's the same thing, I don't want to digress too far, but it's the same thing with the Aboriginals. You know, the white man has come in and legislated for them and told them how to live. They've taken away their money and given them special cars so that they don't have any choices left. And they're doing exactly the same thing to us on a different level. They're taking away our choices, they're taking away our freedom, and they're taking away our sovereignty as a result.
Mike, can I actually say they're also buying votes? I mean, if you think about the essence of socialism, it's more and more dependency on the government. When they brought in the Lima Agreement, remember how I said to you that the unemployment went up 300%?
Yes.
Well, if you think what that actually means, it means a lot more people got dependent on the government for handouts. And in fact, I'm doing the research right at the moment to find out what proportion of our population is now on some form of government handout. And what I've noticed that over the years that percentage keeps increasing. So we've got two things happening. We've got people, full-time work becoming part-time, and the top-up is coming from the government. So what people are doing is voting for the government that's going to give them more handouts instead of going for, well, what's going to stimulate our economy to get us back into full-time work? You see what I mean?
I do. And this is the people who are going to object to our plan to bring in national service are going to be those very people who don't want to work, who want to be dependent on the government.
Well, that's the insidiousness of socialism. It sort of it brings about a kind of malaise and people being dependent on the government, and that's where the danger comes. Do you know what I mean? Instead of being independent and being sovereign in our own lives, we become dependent to the government. Let me give you an example. At that launch that I was at on Saturday, we had the most interesting example of buying votes and buying this complicity. This woman who didn't believe in vaccinations was getting challenged that if she didn't vaccinate her kids, she would lose I think it was $20 a week child support. And so she was trying to choose or trying to work out whether the $20 a week that she was getting was worth giving up for her stand on inoculation. And you're like, I just think this is a part, like, there's a lot of arguments to or fro, but I think that when does parenting become the right of the state? Do you know what? I don't think the government should legislate when somebody is a conscientious objector because they believe the health of their child could be compromised. Do you know what? It's none of their business. And that's where it gets down to. If you have to have separate separate schools for people who are vaccinated and not vaccinated, so be it. But you know what it comes down to? A person has a right to choose to bring up the way they want to bring up their children.
Well, then this comes down to, of course, okay, if we don't want our children to go to school with non-vaccinated kids, we don't want our kids to go to school with people who believe a different religion, where does it stop?
Well, I tell you where, you know, I have a problem when you say that the state decides that homeschooling is illegal and that you can't not homeschool your children, that you can't not inoculate your children, that you can't decide what's best for them based on what you know and believe.
Well, you see, this all comes back to our push to bring in citizens-initiated referendums, because then it would not be up to the government to make these decisions, it would be up to the people. And if enough people agree with this stance, then that so be it. That's the way democracy works.
Well, look at these safe schools that they're trying to push through at the moment. And again, this whole conversation is should homosexuality be something that's openly talked about in the classroom, when the way it's being couched is actually not giving all the facts about the lifestyle and what the death rate is, and also what the abuse rate is, where they're not being filled in. It's being made just a lifestyle conversation instead of the physical effects conversation and the hardcore.
Yeah, well, this is socialism.
And I think, you know,
that's the problem with socialism. I send my kids to school to get educated.
Correct.
Yeah, this should not even be a question for schools. This should be something that the parents take care of. And if homosexuality in the parents' family or in the home is part of their lifestyle, then so be it. But if a kid is going to school, he or she doesn't need to even think about it. They should be concentrating on their studies, full stop. This is not a question. See, this is social engineering brought in by the socialists. And this is where it's wrong. We have to change the system.
So my question is, where do you decide why has the woman who doesn't want to have her child inoculated different to the person that wants to not have their child exposed to homosexuality? Like, you know, these are really deep-seated cultural questions, and as a culturalist, I'm very interested in the what's going on in our culture at the moment and how certain views are being dictated to. And can I bring something up at this point? When we're talking about socialism, they did a study of the people that are actually the lecturers in the university. And what they found in general, that is the majority of lecturers in universities are left-leaning.
Yes.
In the States, in Canada, 82% are left-wing, with varying degrees of communism. In America, only 17% of lecturers were conservatives.
Which explains why the Canadians voted in Trudeau, who was
correct,
a dreadful lefty.
But this is, again, social engineering. And what we're seeing is if the student teachers are coming into a socialist environment, they're going to take that same socialist attitude back into the classroom. And I just think from a society that reflects an equality in views, why have we allowed that the very institutions that are meant to be places where you can have open and free discussion, where it's meant to be an environment of learning, they've become left wing? I just think that's so wrong. And so that means the people coming through them are going to be exposed to only one side of the view.
Yeah.
You know, it concerns me because it goes out into the classroom, and then we end up with a brainwashed community.
Oh,
and what
yeah.
we found, if you look at the Q Society study they did a year ago, before the whole Islam thing broke, it was really interesting when you looked at the age groups of how the 0 to 35s, or, you know, the 7s to 35s, regarded Islam and hijabs and everything to do Sharia law, was almost diametrically opposed to anyone over 35. And it when we think, well, what's so significant about 35? 35 is when we started with the Agenda 21. So 1982 is when we signed that, so that's when the infiltration of that started going into our schools. So what's happened is we've actually, in effect, got an entire generation that have been whitewashed with a way of thinking from the universities, from the socialist agenda that has been going through UN, Labor, into universities, back to the schools. Parents shouldn't be concerned.
They should. But the trouble is, our society, the way it's been engineered now, political debate is almost non-existent. And, you know, people don't even want to talk about politics, and yet they don't realise that politics is the very underpinnings of everything we do. Everything we do is political in some way or another. And yet they've been inculcated with this stupid idea that politics should not be discussed anywhere.
If we are to make informed decisions at the ballot poll, like when we go to vote, we have to have freedom of speech to discuss the issues.
That's right, and of course they don't want freedom of speech, the socialists.
If we're not getting the freedom of speech, then how can we have good government?
Exactly. Now this brings me to another point that I've often thought about. Right now, the big boogeyman are the Muslims. And Islam. But I believe that this is a manufactured fear. I think it's something that the socialists have engineered to get us to become so afraid that they can bring in different new laws that will take away more of our freedoms. And this is exactly what is happening right now. You can see it every day. They brought in these new anti-terror laws and the 18C and the in Queensland we've got the anti-bikie laws, etc., which actually are not even couched for against bikies. Any citizen can be arrested under those laws, and in fact the first person to be arrested under those laws was a chap in a wheelchair, I believe, who hadn't done anything wrong except he associated with somebody who had a criminal record. I'm not exactly sure of the details, but the fact is, an innocent man was charged under those very laws that were supposed to save us from the dreaded biking menace. And yet, I know plenty of bikies, guys who ride bikes. Okay, there may be a few bad apples, but most of them are just ordinary Aussies who love riding bikes. So this whole thing is manufactured by the socialists to try and get us to give up our freedoms, and it's working.
Well, I know that the 18C legislation was brought out after the UN agreed to a lesser version of blasphemy laws. Mm. They were brought to the blasphemy laws, which is about offence when people, you know, to do with religion and also part of Islam. It was introduced into the UN, and the UN made a ruling, and Australia then followed that ruling by introducing 18C legislation about 4 years later. Right. So this is what I mean by the UN is actually bringing in agendas into our legal system, and that's actually illegal. Why would we want a curtailing of our freedom of expression? Like, what Australian would ask for that? We call a spade a spade. You're going to tell us now we're not allowed to call it a spade, we have to call it something else? I think part of being in a democracy is continuing to test where people are trying to take away their freedoms for tolerance. You know, and tolerance is a double-way street. One of the things that I wanted to talk about while we're at it was, you know how I was saying that the universities are very left in the views of the people that are actually the university lecturers?
Yes.
Well, you think about this. Right, you get a whole lot of people in government and they want an expert opinion on, say, for example, and this is a true fact, on whether we should introduce or allow mosques to build in Australia. This is what happens. So if you have mainly left-wing people, in other words, people who have a socialist agenda where it is about one world government, everyone integrated, a lessening of religion in the to communism, which says religion is banned, What are you going to get when you get experts? And this is when they ask the question. The person who led the committee to come back on the information on mosques in Australia was a professor by the name of Professor Gary Bormer. And he interviewed 200 or so Muslims and then presented his report and basically said harmless. And in the report, he admitted he had not read the Quran. So to me, that was a massive dereliction of due diligence. But what do you get when you ask experts? If we've got a, let's say, even the right side of politics defaulting to universities only to get left-wing giving their opinion, who's going to go against that? Who's going to go against the experts?
Right.
Do you see what I mean? Like, it's insidious. We actually have to get balance back into our culture. Okay. You know, we need state universities balanced. You know, I'd like to see all university appointments for people that are either middle to right until the balance is there. And, you know, in humanities, in places where there are other viewpoints expressed, we can't have this closing down to one way of thinking. It's just, it's criminal. It's criminal and it's wrong.
Yeah, and it's crippling. It's crippling.
Yeah, well, it's crippling. I agree. We need freedom. Look, you know, I'm okay if somebody's a communist and they want to have their communist views. That's okay. But, you know, I don't want them having a louder voice in Australia than the right side of politics or the middle side of politics. You know, I think everyone is entitled to their voice, and that's why I don't believe in restriction of speech. I believe we have to have robust discussions to maintain a democracy.
I agree. As you and I often do, we may not always see eye to eye, but we do have robust discussions, and
exactly.
that's the whole point of it. Just to give you another example of where we are actually being repressed by the left, on the February the 28th, the Buddies for Refugees up in Butterham here are holding a Meet the Candidates session. Now, Jim Savage, who is running for the Mature Party, and myself, running for Restore Australia, have not been invited to that. They probably didn't even know we were running, but that's not the point. When I contacted them today and spoke to the chap, he was very, very reluctant to even talk about it because he didn't know who I was for a start, but even so, when I pointed out to him that he is holding a public forum to meet the candidates, surely he should be inviting all the candidates so that the public can gain an overall view of our views. And whether he agrees with them or not is irrelevant. If in a public forum, all views should be heard.
I agree. What about the other thing? What you reminded me of is the other side of it, where you've got a mufti in control of thousands of votes and going to the various parties and actually saying, well, you know, I need you to go this particular way. Mm. What was it? The Grand Mufti's got control of 15 seats? Is that...
That's
I think
correct.
That, yeah, 15 seats.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's a more... Do you know how many people we've got armed in the armed forces?
Yeah, not many.
35,000.
Yeah.
That's actually a very serious statistic.
It is.
And, you know, like about the undue influence that somebody like that can have on our democratic system. Because you think about it, why should a person, like there's only 400,000 Muslims in Australia if you go for the 2011 census, right? So that's only 2% of the vote. So why should 2% of the vote be able to influence 15 seats when it's the majority? I mean, if we walked away from the people that were being influenced by the Grand Mufti, they would have no power at all. Mm. So I'm wondering, how do we get around this kind of thing? And it's the same as buying votes. You know, the major parties were on record last month saying that they refuse to let people know who's putting their coffers. And I think that's the problem. You know why everyone's pro-Muslim at the moment? is because there's been massive investment of sales money into the political coffers. I can give you a really good example of that. In the Congo, a person has just been back to see his family. His brother was given $100,000 to convert to Islam. He was then taken over to Saudi Arabia, and all expenses paid. And if you're talking Congo, you know the price of living up there is not very very high. And he was brought back. Do you know why they chose him?
Why?
The media.
What, sorry?
He was in the media.
Yeah.
And they wanted to know how they could infiltrate and get Islam into the Congo.
Which brings up a good point. How much does Waleed Ali get from the Islamic Council, etc., to propound his views on us all on public TV?
This is all coming from the Saudi government. You know, like they said, how many billions did they say they would make available to indoctrinate the West,
yeah,
inculcate it with Islam? We have to consider this too, like a hundred. You know, like, even in our, between you and me, if somebody gave you $100,000, you'd have to look twice at it. You know what I mean? That's a lot of money. And imagine if in our terms, it would be $1 million.
Yeah.
That's a lot of money. And I just go, how do people in everyday lives, in positions of, you know, like media people, what do they do when they come into that kind of influence? But I just think a lot of people actually have ethics, that they take the money and then try and put Islam forward in a good view. And maybe that can explain why we get some very strange support. Is that a good way of saying it?
I wouldn't say support. I think propaganda is more like what you're talking about here, right?
Well, look at Sunrise last year. No patriot could go on there without being made to look like an absolute idiot.
Yeah.
And in fact, I think Rise Up Australia, Danny Nalia, he actually put in an official complaint and they had to interview him nicely.
Mm.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I just wonder how far this money has gone.
Well, it's gone all the way, you can believe that. Let's have another break now, because I think it's time for us to have a little bit of light-hearted fun and listen to Mighty Mo. So I'll be back shortly.
Mighty Mo!
Greetings, listeners, to another peek into the amorous and debauched world of the world's most famous fornicator. The man who could never keep it in his pants, because he wore none. Yes, I'm talking about Mighty Mo. Let's see what he's up to this week. Oh, Mighty Mo, I bring great tidings. Yes, Fizzy, what is it this time? Have you brought me the head of a Jew? Oh, no, bloodthirsty one. I bring you an opportunity to subjugate a whole new land. One that lies beyond the sea, far, far away over the horizon, and many leagues. Get to the point, Fizzy. What are you rambling on about? Oh, great and lustrous one, whose face features more fine hairs than the tail of a camel. I have been asked to invite you to a banquet of magnificent proportions with a delegation from Australia. Have you gone stark as Fizzy? Been smoking too much weed? What are you talking about, Australia? Oh, I wish you're dizzy one, but I have run out of hash. However, these Australians are here to trade. Trade what, Fizzy? I have all I need. Hoorie's up the kazoo, camels in the zoo. And more wives than I can poke a stick at. Oh, come with me, O rampant one. I shall escort you to their banquet. Here, I will open the door of the tent to allow your abdominous pot-bellied porcine tub of lard to pass through. Oh, very well. Walk this way, my corpulent and chubby master.
I walked that way, I would need more talcum powder between my legs. Slow down, Frizzy. How far is it now?
Just around the corner, oh dumpty, podgy, pudgy, tubby, roly, poly friend.
Are we there yet?
Yes, oh adipose and oleaginous one. Through this door. Oh, attention everyone. I am pleased to announce the arrival of our guest tonight, Mighty Mo. That Fizzy. Mighty Mo, I would like to introduce you to your host tonight. This is Foster Foreskin from Bondi, Australia.
Foreskin, did you say?
No, mate. That's Foreskin without the R. How's it going?
It's not going anywhere. It's still in my pants. And who is this delightful little hoorie?
Careful, mate. She's no whore. That's me ball and chain.
Your what?
Me trouble and strife. You know? Me wife. Anorexic.
Greetings, infidels. And welcome to Medina. This is my current wife. I'm a sultana.
That's your wife? I thought you'd brought a garbage bag in with you. Struth. What do you see in her?
But that's the point, my uncouth friend. I do get to see in through the letterbox first. You have no idea how titillating that can be, and that's why I love to dress my women in burkas.
Yeah, I don't mind a bit of titty myself, but I'm being rude. Come on, sit down. I've asked Abu Bugger and Yucky Kebabby, our chefs, to prepare a veritable banquet tonight. We'll be chucking some prawns on the barbie, smoking some ham hocks, and quaffing a few ales for whatever ails you.
Fizzy, you fool. Why have you brought me here to meet these ham-handed Australians? I have never been so insulted in all my life. Don't they know that we never touch the flesh of the pig or drink alcohol?
Yes, oh lusty puissant Mighty Mo. But Foreskin says that where he comes from, you are not a real man unless you eat and drink these things.
Never. I do believe it's time to sever our relationship, Fizzy. I was getting bored with Fizzy anyway. Here, Foreskin, just kick his head out of the way. Now, Foreskin...
It's Foreskin, ya drongo.
Yes, well, as I was saying, lead me to your table.
And there we shall leave our hero in the clutches of a true blue Australian. Will Mighty Mo survive this onslaught on his senses? Will he be a good guest and eat and drink what is placed in front of him? Or will he insist on his guests doing it his way? We'll have to wait until next time to hear more adventures of...
Mighty Mo!
Back to Gotcha Radio Show with your host Mike Holt and my guest is Monica Evers. Monica, we've been discussing the sad state of our politics and the world situation in general, especially as it's being caused by Islam. But let's talk about the political situation, especially in regards to the law. You have some interesting views on that.
Look, I keep coming back to the conversation about what infringes on our representation to the government. Like, I just go... Mike, you and I, we're part of a community. We want to be heard in the government field. We put up laws that we want our lawmakers to create. And then we have this quirky thing that allows our prime ministers to go off and sign treaties with other countries that our legal system then has to somehow encompass and work with alongside the laws that are created by the government.
Well, hang on a moment. You said that allows our Prime Minister. Who allows him? Did you or I or the people of Australia allow him to do this?
Well, do you know what I think? Every treaty that a government, that a Prime Minister puts us into should be reviewed by the next ongoing Prime Minister that comes in. And if they don't like it, they throw it out.
I think it should be reviewed by the people and voted on in a referendum myself.
Well, I'd agree with that, but at a minimum, you know, like between, I think Keating and Hawke put us into 1,000 different treaties. It's got to the point now where Australia, we are co-signatories to something like 1,500 treaties, whereas America, as big as it is only co-signatory to 500.
Yeah.
What that means is we've got our hands tied because we did a treaty on something. What they're allowing corporations now to have had more sovereign right over the Australian people. You know, we can't do it. It's against our constitution. And I just think, you know, we need to take back our sovereignty and start again almost. I think what we're going through, all the different things that are undermining our democracy. I mean, if we look at the treaties and, for example, allowing a sovereign power outside of Australia, if, for example, the United Nations in this particular case, they're having an influence in our legislature without the Australian people wanting it. I mean, I don't believe we had a we didn't have a referendum on whether we wanted to sign up to the United Nations. And I don't think they should be allowed to have that kind of influence. Facebook, being able to ban admins when the laws of the land says in Australia you can discuss things of public interest. Again, this is a foreign power, if you like, exerting its will on the democracy of Australia. And when we have courts that come in, and look, there's two parts to this. Not only are they faced with having to do all the treaties and understand what's behind it and the human rights things that we've brought ourselves into, we have this really weird system showing itself. You know, like you and I have been, because we're looking at a vertical line in our society, we've gone, oh, let's have a look at Islam in our society and how's that, you know, working out. We're noticing this system as a result of it, and we're able to watch and see all the aberrations to what should be a really tight democratic system. And for example, like, how is it possible that a person can have a cultural consideration weighted against their case and then not get the same kind of punishment as a native? Like, where does that happen? How does that happen? The law is the law. You know, you rape a woman, it's something. You know, if you hurt a child, it's something. You know, and it should be equal. And it's not cultural if somebody comes in and they're used to beating up their women or raping their children. I don't care if it's cultural. If that's the case, we don't want them here.
Yeah.
You know, because we need to have the law stand for something.
They are so diametrically opposed to everything we stand for that if we allow Islam to stay here, eventually it will do for us what it's done to every other country that's infested or infected.
Well, you don't get anything else when you have an intolerant society. I mean, that's really where we're coming back from.
Yeah.
But I'm talking about judges making laws or changing the laws because of a... And I'm trying to work out whether it's as a result of the treaties. Is it a result of left-wing politics? But why is not a judgment equal? Like, why does somebody from another culture get a different ruling to a native Australian?
Well, I do believe this is all part of Agenda 21 and the undermining of our cultural underpinnings because of Islam. That's the problem.
Well, Agenda 21 wants us to lose our sovereignty. I mean, the basis of Agenda 21 is that we are part of a global... of the world, yeah. And therefore we should think of us outside of our sovereignty, and we should actually look at our position as one of the many countries in the world. But the problem with the United Nations is that only one country gets one vote. So you get enormous countries that occupy vast tracts of land with huge populations getting the same vote as somebody much smaller with not very much, you know, not the same breadth of problems, if you know what I mean. And I just don't see that that's equitable. We have a constitution that needs updating. Let's start there. In Switzerland, in Iceland, there are other, and even New Zealand, there are countries now that are, Switzerland's been doing it for a long time. They have a very switched on people that are savvy, politically savvy.
Because they have the same government.
Well, exactly.
Yeah.
And what I'm saying is, you know, we need to start having that same say. We've got quietly malaise by just believing in parties and going, oh, she'll be all right, they'll look after us, and it's not happening. So we now have to look at, well, what are our options? What do we need to do?
Okay, you brought up New Zealand. There is a very bad case of citizens-initiated referendums because they're not binding. And this is something that we must make sure when we do bring in CIR, that our referendums are binding on the government.
Absolutely. So
if we look at Iceland, if we look at Switzerland, they are binding. And there's a number of, I think there's about 18 states in America now have CIR, citizens-initiated referendums. Probably the most famous one is California. But California has also had a few problems with it. But, you know, at the end of the day, California now has exactly the type of government that they want. It's what the people want. And this is what CIR does. It gives the people the voice to have a say in government. And whether that's a good voice or a bad voice, I believe will even itself out in the long run. Because when people are faced with a decision that will ultimately affect their lives for a long time, or in ways that they perhaps were not aware of at the time, they will make careful decisions in the future. Now, I know that the Californians have made a couple of funny decisions. Are they happy with those decisions? Apparently so at this stage, but how long for? Before there is another referendum brought out to rectify the mistakes. And democracy is a wonderful thing because it does give us the opportunity to rectify our mistakes. And that's the power of it.
Yeah, I think that's where we need to go. You know, like, I don't have a problem with people putting up ideas and saying, well, I would like to try this. But we need to be able to make those changes. And at the moment, the only people that can do a referendum are the politicians. Yeah. And so we're stuck when we have petitions going to Parliament with 2 million, which is what they ask for, 2 million signatures.
1% of the population, which is actually about 120,000 people. So if you try and get 120,000 people to sign a petition, it's not easy.
I know, but there's been petitions of 2 million people.
Oh, I know they have, yeah.
That's been ignored. So yes. How is that possible?
Well, they just throw it in the bin because they are not bound by any of these. They are not bound to obey the will of the people.
There's no way of withdrawing a politician. There's no accountability for politicians. The accountability becomes a party thing. And what we see is they're being censured only when they go against the company policy. You know, if they go against the party agenda, then they're censured. No, it's not democracy in action.
You know, this is why it's so essential at this election that we exercise our vote and vote for small parties that support citizens-initiated referendums. Now, on our website, on the right-hand side of the page, there's a column down there, and there's a under recent posts, you'll see a post there, CIR, yes, no. Have a look at that page, because that lists all the political parties, not quite all of them yet, but we're working on that, because it will be updated. And it shows whether they support CIR or not. A couple of them have prevaricated and said, oh, I'm not sure. The latest one was Darren Hitch, and he just said, I don't want to give you a decision on that. It's not a yes or a no, because we want to concentrate on our core policies. Well, to me, that's a no, because if he doesn't support CIR, then he doesn't support democracy for the people, and his own agenda is more important than than the needs of the people.
I think it's a really hard thing for people to get their head around. I mean, the way it works in, say, for example, Iceland, is they go to the polls and there's, hey, what do you think about, do you think homosexuality should be taught in schools? Do you think we should be in the Middle East? There'll be a number of a referendum questions, so that when you're going in to vote for what party you want, you're also voting on key issues that need consideration. And I like that idea, because what it does is it says to the government, well, look, you're in government, but these are what the people actually want. And it makes the government then having to deal with the issues as the people want it. I know there's been some very unpolitically correct decisions on gay marriage in one particular, I think it was Slovenia, where they asked for it to go to a referendum, and it was not that. And it's not. I'm not saying that I'm against gay marriage or anything. I'm just saying at this moment in time, this country, the people are not ready for it. And you know what? I think that's a fair call. I think people have to mature into a way of thinking.
Well, the thing is, right now, the problem is now we are under such attack from so many different sides, not just from Islam, but also from the socialists, from the UN and everything else. We don't have the time anymore to try and mature. We have to take action now. And if that means that we have to grow up very quickly and get CIR, even if the people are not ready for it, I can guarantee you that if we get it, within a very short space of time, people will mature enough to make it work, because if they don't, they will see that the folly of not finding out what the issues are. Australians will mature. We have the mental capacity. We have the brain. So, you know, it's just a matter of time. And sometimes, you know, people have to be pushed into a decision, whether they like it or not. You know? And then all of a sudden that decision makes a lot of sense.
I have to tell you, there's one other thing we have to consider, and we might as well talk about it, and that's the media. Unless we can get robust discussion, and this is where we started from, you know, like about being censored and closed down, a democracy can't exist. I mean, how can we possibly have a referendum about a topic that's politically insensitive, you know, politically sensitive, if the media aren't going to give both sides of it, or they start being political on one direction only? We saw it up here in Bendigo. You know, like from the day one the mosque was announced, there was no political discussion on what that would mean, what is Islam, who are the people coming in, who are the backers of the mosque. None of this.
Mm-hmm.
It was pro-mosque, and what a great thing for multiculturalism. That was the only thing that was allowed in the media. Yeah. And what happened was a rebellion. I mean, really, that's, if you want to know what happened in Bendigo, it was media driven. And I fear the same thing's going to happen in Australia. The media has a problem in that it does not allow a discussion anymore. It doesn't bring both sides. We've got Bolt and we've got Miranda Devine and a handful of other people that are willing to stand up and do tough discussions. So the question for me has also been, again, going back to the culturalists, is why is it that they're always doing a left... Why is there such a left bias in the media?
Again, I think this comes back to the universities.
Well, that's where I go too. You know, like, it all starts there, and I just don't even know how that it happened, that the left-wing got so ensconced in there. You know, the question we've got to ask ourselves as a nation is, do we want to be sovereign or do we want to be part of a global conglomerate? And, you know, the thing is, if we're sovereign, we've got independence, we can look after ourselves. And Australia in the 1900s, early 1900s, We were sovereign. Before we gave away our banks, we were a very wealthy nation that were independent, and I believe we could go back that way. However, what we've got now is like we've got two groups. We've got the people who want to be sovereign, and we've got the people who want to belong to a global one world government economy. And I think this is what's underneath it all is what's splitting our nation.
Yes.
We're losing our sovereignty, which means, you know, people here, where our voice is being second to the treaties that the prime ministers are signing us up to the agreements that we've agreed to the party agendas, to the various so-called experts around the world, because we're also in a global expertise economy, and there again, if you know, the left has managed to get into in all the West. I think really, I don't know. I'm looking at it and going,
how did we get from here to there to here?
No, I know. Like, do we really want to be a sovereign country? I mean, this is a question that all Australians have to ask themselves. Do we want to be sovereign? In other words, do we want Australia for Australians, or do we want to be part of a one-world government?
Well, you see, this then brings up the question of do we want to become a republic and all that entails.
But underneath it all, Mike, you still have to answer the question. It's not about being a republic or what that looks like. It's, do you want to belong to a global one-world government, or do you want to belong? Do you want Australia as an independent nation? And they're the two things that Australia's independence has been compromised. Our democracy has been compromised, our voice has been compromised, and it's been compromised by people. Like the UN, what does it give us? I would love to know. We're paying out, what, $45 million in fees? We're having to pay out for what we've cut. The Lima Agreement has cost us internally, both in lost production, lost hours, and
lost
GDP, right? Tremendous cost. The Agenda 21 is having its say, and I'm just looking at, well, where's the benefit? Are we really better off for being party to this? I'm looking and going, we're saying we're a democracy, but are we already a socialist country?
We've been a socialist country for a long time. For the last 50, 40 years. Ever since Gott came in, we've been a socialist country, whether you like it or not. I mean, I've lived in socialist countries. I know what socialism looks like, and this is it.
So then should we even be bothered having this conversation?
Absolutely, like really, because we don't want to be a socialist country. We've always valued our freedom, but we've become a de facto socialist country. But that can be changed if the will of the people decides that it wants to change it. So what we're fighting for here is a voice for the people to decide how we want to be governed. That's what it's all about. And, you know, up until now we've been told how we want to be governed. We've been told the sort of government that we want. We've been told which candidates we can vote for, which party to vote for. And whether we vote in the left or the right, we're still getting the same bucket of fish, aren't we?
Well, okay, let's you know, we've brought up a whole lot of issues. How would CIR, Citizens Initiated Referendum, get the media start being able to deliver both sides of an argument?
I think, first of all, we'd have to change the way that the media behaves. And that would have to be through legislation. They would not be allowed to present only one side of the argument. So if they're going to present a political argument, for instance, they would have to submit articles by both sides. At the moment, we're not getting that. We're only getting one side of the argument. Very, very few journalists these days are actually presenting the for and against arguments, are they?
I think papers should have to print from both sides.
That's what I'm saying, yes.
But there was a change in the way that the media went about business, where they stopped doing facts and it became 80% opinion.
Yes.
And I think that's a problem too, because that's a dumbing down of our society, because we're not given the facts to make informed judgments.
Exactly, but that's because of the people who own the media right now. We need to diversify the media. We shouldn't have it owned by just a couple of media moguls. It needs to be taken away from them. They have far too much power to influence political decisions. And we need to privatize it, put it back in the hands of the small town operator, and let the people decide whether they want to buy it or not based on the news that it presents.
And okay, let's go. Can I go back one? Because I'm not so much into the privatization. I just suddenly went sounding very communist here. You know, the thing, if the real issue that we've got is it has business got too big?
Oh, that's what it is.
Like, you know, I remember seeing that of the top 100 economies in the world, 51, and I can't remember what year it was, but it was in the last 10 years, 51 of the biggest economies in the world were corporations. And the problem with that is they're not paying tax, they're not having to use their money, their profits, to look after the welfare, the sick, the policing, and all those other systems that the society has created for a better society, and yet they're able to come in, site some profits, and then take them offshore without actually paying into the very people that they've... We pay for booze in Australia with Australian money, correct?
Yes.
But they don't have... And they've got an office here, but you can't contact them. No one knows where it is. You want to take them to court, you have to go to America. And yet they do and transact business here. How is this possible?
Well, if you read their terms and conditions, it actually states in there that all legal cases must be decided in the state of Delaware where they are incorporated.
Well, I know, but if they're trading here, and this is where the internet needs to be, this is an Attorney General issue, right? If you engage citizens of a country, in our case, Australia, and you take money from those citizens of Australia, why shouldn't you be taxed? Like, why shouldn't you have to set up, gateways that, you know, like if there's a 10% sales tax on any transaction done in Australia, why shouldn't you be paying that 10% sales tax to the Australian government?
And also, why shouldn't we have sovereignty over the Australian side of the business? In other words, our legal system must have the right of law over them.
I agree. It should be fine. I'm with you. 100%.
I think it's time for another song. We're carrying on here a bit and hitting along there very well. But time for a good song by Fleetwood Mac with Rihanna.
Bye.
Welcome back to Gotcha Radio with your host Mike Holt and our guest Monica Evers today. We've been talking about a lot of subjects, covered quite a lot. Monica, why don't you sum up what we've been discussing and perhaps you can round things off for us.
Okay. I think for someone who's really not been that interested in politics, the last 2 years have shown me that if you just let the status quo go, things split in because of other people's agendas. And, you know, without being, I don't think people have been malicious. I think in general people think that they're doing the right thing by everyone. But I think these are the kinds of decisions that as a nation we need to have more input to and discuss more. And that discussion is being stopped by a media that doesn't want us to stop it. It's being stopped in schools because somehow we've ended up with a political correctness that seeps into not only the media but in the schools, the university, in places that should have been arenas where new ideas and new ways of being are encouraged and flourishing. And instead, that's the discussions that we need to be having that make us a robust democracy are being quashed. And I look at it from a point of view of somebody who really wants the best for Australia, really wants the best for the next generation. And I just feel as though that the voice of the people is going to be swamped by other agendas. We've got treaties that are muffling our voices. We've got corporates that are now saying that we can't do legislation that affects them. We're having prime ministers that are able to exert their will against, and I think the climate change summit that we just had proved the fact that Turnbull signed us up to something that I think if we went to referendum, people would have said no. We've got courts that are caught up with having to do administer treaties, but also the will of judges are being put, again, above the will of the people. We've got experts that are, at the moment, in our universities, that are of one particular political leaning. And I don't think we can do that either, because our governments are leaning towards these experts without realising that there's a political agenda that comes with the expertise. We've got schools that are being inculcated by a certain way of thinking. And we've got, in general, the majority of people are still pretty uneducated about the system, which is where we started the whole conversation. You know, I don't know anything about, you know, the girl in the, while you were having your teeth done. We don't know enough about our system. And I think all of this has to change, and as a person watching it all, as a culturalist, I see a change in Australian culture, and I don't think it's for the better. I think we're losing our sovereignty. I think we're paying too much heed to UN, and I only have to look at the mess that Europe's in to know that it's not going to work. How can you have a committee deciding on anything? The EU's breaking down, the UN is also going to have its own issues. And we've got no voice into the government because of the way the political parties are pushing people to accept their agendas instead of being a bottom-up, having people who are elected to represent the people in their electorate. I just feel as though somewhere we let go of what we need to be doing, and it's our fault because we stopped being interested. We stopped taking notice. We stopped standing up for ourselves, and we only have ourselves to blame. So, you know, my appeal would be to everybody who's not that interested in politics is to start getting interested. Start having a look. Start speaking to your local MPs. Start having your voice heard. Taking an interest in what's being decided in your name. I mean, I was shocked to find out that Victoria has passed legislation that allows girls as young as 14 to be married if they get married overseas. When you know, this is not the culture that we want for our country. So, Mike, you know, where I come from, you know, good government starts with me. Good government starts with me taking an interest. You know, and good government starts with me looking around and going, this is not working, and talking about it. And good government starts with me having the courage to fix it.
Yes, it all comes back to personal responsibility.
Yes, it does.
All right. So where do we go from there? I think we've pretty well explained what the problems are. How do we solve them?
Well, if you look at every one of them, I mean, I think it's really easy. Facebook, we make that accountable to Australian law when it's in Australia. So any Australian citizen is covered by Australian law. And that, you know, if they make an agreement with Merkel, that doesn't mean anything in Australia. UN treaties, personally, I think we should get out of all of them. And all treaties should be reviewed. The Prime Minister, if he signs us up, that's fine. He can do that for the term that he's elected. But once he's not elected, then I think the next lot in can actually have a look at it. Judges, I think we have to, they're not a law unto themselves. They're accountable to our parliamentary system. And I think that they need to be accountable as well. I don't believe political parties actually have the true representation of a person is that they're meant to be a person that represents them, that the community they're in, they shouldn't be of a political persuasion. I think they should just take, you know, like, be a messenger. This is who I am. This is what my community thinks. This is what I represent. It should be I'm a Liberal or a Labor. I question whether there is any legitimacy to parties. And as for the universities, I would like to see that there be a mandated, you've got to change the balance up and get a broad range of views into those kinds of institutions. And, you know, the thing that we both massively agree on is that there must be a means of the people having a way to initiate a referendum. And I think citizens-initiated referendum is one of those valve for good government. If the politicians aren't able to address the issue for whatever reason, then the people need to be able to find a means to be able to do it.
So why do you think CIR has not become a reality in the past, and what are the chances of bringing it in this time?
I think reality is that the Australian people were pretty happy with the government. I think the whole Islam issue has been the thing that's undone the government. I think people have gone all of a sudden, hang on, they've looked at what Islam represents to the Australian culture, and they've said, well, we've got some strict values. How do we stop this? And because of the consistency of the three major parties, the people have been able to. I think it's the first time I've ever felt in all the time I've ever voted that I don't have a say in Parliament. First time. I actually am quite shocked by it. And I think a lot of people feel the same way. They've looked at them and said there's no difference. There's no one looking after my interests. They're all looking after their own interests. And I don't know when that all happened. You know, I can only look at it and say maybe it happened in Gotham, but I was too busy having a good time. I think that's the truth, you know. Well, Mike, what do you think? You know, like, look, citizens-initiated referendum is definitely one of the things that can make a huge difference. But what do you think, apart from that? I know that you've looked at changing the electoral boundaries and the way that they're elected. What would you do with the treaties and the United Nations and things like that?
Well, yeah, that they should be immediately torn up and reviewed and renegotiated, but Australia would have to do that from a position of strength, and we don't have any strength at the moment because our people don't have any say. I think basically the stage we're at now is education. We need to educate people that they do have the power to make a difference. It's just a matter of
taking that power and using it. And we've grown, as you say, we've grown complacent. We all drop the ball, but that ball ultimately is in our court. We have to take that ball and run with it. And the only way we're going to do that is if we all wake up and realise that we can make a difference.
So knowing that the whole citizens initiated referendum, I mean, I look at Switzerland and they've got a very good media policy. You know, not media policy, but their media is pretty matter of fact and they report it as it is. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
If we're going to educate into doing something like citizens initiated referendum, it almost has to be a grassroots thing.
Yeah.
It's got to be something that comes from the people, and it probably comes from Facebook, and it probably comes from other means outside of the media, which is crazy.
Well, that's it. As you say, our media is not up to the task. In fact, the media is responsible for the situation we're in. So we have to take different ways of bringing people to realise that they actually have the power. It's up to us.
I've spoken to people in the media and I've asked them, I said, you know, is this what you've gone to university and that to be a spokesperson for a particular point of view? And they say no, but they're having to carry certain political lines off the paper or their editors or something. You know, we have to find a way of breaking it, you know, and respecting individuality and as a culture rewarding it.
Well, yeah. Let's go back a few decades to the 50s, which was a very dynamic time in terms of the media, etc. It was just in its infancy, basically, after the Second World War. Do you remember what it was like then?
No, Mike, I wasn't born then.
Thank you, dear.
But, you know, if you want to take me to the 70s, I think in the 70s we were... We were disputing the establishment. I think that's probably where I would go. That was kind of a rebellious period.
Yes, and we had all of those alternative newspapers and things like that. They didn't last long. Do you know why?
No.
I think because they didn't bring any solutions to the table. You know, and this is the thing I see with the Patriot movement too, in a certain degree. It's all very well to get out on the street and protest, but at the end of the day, if we're going to achieve anything, we have to give people solutions that they can actually feel comfortable about doing themselves. As you said before, it's up to the people. We have that power.
Well, bringing solutions is, you know, to bring in a citizens-initiated referendum mantle, that's one thing, but I think people have to go even to there's something wrong. And we have that discussion of there's something wrong when we've got the media and everyone else going, shh, we can't talk about that. Or Facebook going, no, I'm sorry, you can't discuss that. Do you see what I mean? Like, it comes back to that. The aim, to me, if you said to me, Monica, you can take out one piece of legislation, what would that be? I would remove 18C. Okay, you know why? Because without robust conversation and freedom to have the conversation, you kill democracy, you kill the ability for people to see another point of view. And I just think that's where we've gone wrong. This is a really simple legislation that Tony Abbott had the opportunity to repeal, but he obviously had other backroom deals that he had to administer to, and we lost the opportunity.
Yeah, and that's the problem with the current system, isn't it?
Yeah, sure
it's
is.
It's so easy to suborn because money interests and political interests override the will of the people.
That's it. I mean, I'd love that piece of legislation put to the country. You know, are we allowed to call a spade a spade? Do you know how much that would be thrown out if they tried a mouthpiece on our hot... This is part of the Australian culture. This is what we do well. We just name it and claim it.
Yeah.
You know, and I think it's that an attack on our whole sovereignty that came from the UN. And most people don't realise that 18C came from the UN. And I think that's wrong. So, you know, so for me, Mike, you go CIR, and I say, we have to go even before that. We have to go all the way back to Adam and remove that. And I'm sure there are other people that have got even better ideas on what we need to do.
All right, Monica, I'd like to thank you for coming on the show today. It's been a real pleasure. I think we discussed a lot of stuff. I think you've probably got a lot more you'd like to say. So I hope that I can convince you to come back again. And let's talk some more.
Right.
Okay.
Okay, well.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
All right. See you again.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.
This is the Restore Australia Radio Show with your host, Mike Holt, signing off. Until next time.